from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news. Broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Many years ago, I can remember doing an interview with CBC Radio up here in Canada, and we were talking about being able to speak publicly, being able to present yourself, whether you're talking on the radio, whether you're a politician, a sports figure, someone who is in business, whatever. How you speak will determine how successful you are. My next guest, Maurice Domino, is the author of a new book, The Art of Public Speaking, How to Kill from the Stage. That book can be ordered at www.killfromthestage.com or by calling toll-free at 1-866-252-7768. And I thought I'd bring on Maurice tonight to talk about, most recently, Mark McGuire coming clean. Of course, nobody is surprised. Did he do it right? Let's talk about some of the politicians and how they present themselves and give you some tips on public speaking and how you can be successful at that. Maurice, welcome to the Dana Pretzer Show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Dana. Thank you so much for your invitation.
Now, I think it's so important, whether you're doing what I'm doing right now, whether you're, and you may not know that besides this, I'm also a law enforcement officer. So if I'm not doing the program speaking on the radio now, and I say I'm talking to an angry crowd, it's how you present yourself, how you publicly speak will either make you or break you. Am I wrong?
No, you're more than correct. First impressions are made, within the first 3 to 6 seconds? And the majority of first impressions are made as soon as you open your mouth. People will judge you. People will give you their impression of you instantly as soon as the moment you open your mouth. So when it comes to public speaking, it's very important that we present ourselves in the best possible manner when meeting new people, current clients, or what have you.
Now, we're in an information age. Now, of course, we've always had television and media and radio and no matter what. But with the Internet, with cameras in your face 24/7, especially if you're a public figure, we'll get to Mark McGuire in a second. It is so important you don't get caught proverbially with your pants down. There's a big election happening in Massachusetts tonight, and if you look at the public speaking style of Brown versus Coakley, I believe her name is, I see a big difference. I'm not sure if you follow that.
No, definitely. I've been eavesdropping in on that very interesting race in Massachusetts with the Republicans coming out ahead. And here's another great example of even when they're standing up on a soapbox. So if you're a politician in the corporate world, even if you're part of the church, again, how you present yourself in public is going to sway the audience. I mean, we can go back to, here's an interesting thing, JFK and Richard Nixon.
Yep.
When they were on TV, what did people see? They saw this nice young gentleman speaking very well, very eloquently, and when they cut to the other gentleman, here he was sweating profusely with a 5 o'clock shadow, and who won?
Yeah, exactly. Maurice Domino is here. They call him the Sicilian Mentor. And again, go to his webpage at www.killingfromthestage.com and check out his new book, The Art of Public Speaking, How to Kill from the Stage. Let's get into Mark McGuire a little bit. That's one of the reasons I brought you on tonight. Of course, him coming clean, and I'm not sure if I like that term or not, but you know what I mean. He's, as some people say, and maybe I'm getting old when I use this term, a phony is a $3 bill, because everyone can read, and that's that instinct that you get, you know, when he was testifying before Congress and taking the Fifth and all that sort of stuff. It's how you present, and your sincerity, I guess, is a big part of your public speaking. You can't be phony.
That's for sure. In my book, The Art of Public Speaking, I say over and over again, and if your listeners, if they could take anything from this, this is the important part. When it comes to public speaking, make sure you speak from your heart. Was Mark McGuire speaking from his heart, or was he speaking for his race to the Hall of Fame?
You know, and that is so important. And let's quantify the difference between speaking from your heart and what you may think is sincere and what I may think is sincere. A lot of people can be bought by, I'll use the big example, Barack Obama, an excellent public speaker, George W. Bush, who stumbled and mumbled, but there was a sincerity between the two. One worked well with a teleprompter. The other one seemed to work well from his heart, maybe not so much from his head.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I believe that you're dealing with fellow humans. So when they see somebody standing in front of them, they want to have that connection. So if we could reach people on that human level, be it from the teleprompter or from speaking from our heart, we got to make that connection. Even with you on the line here, with your show here, you're connecting with people. You're speaking your mind in your way, in your words, and in your public presentation. And that's why you have the following that you have, Dana, is because you're connecting with your people. So that's what we got to get out of this. A lot of people think that when we speak in public, we're just speaking at people. No, what I say in my book and my boot camps is that when we speak to people, we got to speak with them.
Yeah, the term gift of the gab, again, maybe I'm dating myself a little bit when you hear that. I've heard that several times. Superiors, people who listen to my program, I think I'm in my 12th year of doing this radio program now, they will say, Dana, you have a gift of the gab. What does that mean?
That means you're eloquent, that you're good as a conversationalist. So if someone's speaking, you could stay right in step with them and have a conversation, have a two-way speech with them, a two-way conversation with them. Now, I don't want your listeners to say, hey, I don't have a gift for a gab, so therefore I'm not going to be good at public speaking. Two different things. When we're up on the stage, if you have a template, if you have a blueprint of how to go from point A to point B, guess what? You could be perceived as someone that has the gift of the gab or a good public speaker. And that's the idea here. We got to have that map, that pathway to take us from one point to the next point and take our audience on a lovely journey using public speaking.
When I look at the show notes tonight, we talk about McGuire and how the analysts, the talking heads, so to speak, on television, in the print media, internet, radio, whatever, how they reacted to his coming clean, so to speak. And there seems to be a big confusion, not only from the press perspective, but from the person's perspective. Is it, Maurice, is it something that maybe if you just don't care about it and all you're doing is reporting about it, you don't grasp the big picture?
I think what we're seeing from the sports analyst as well as his peers, people in and out of baseball, in and out of the league, you're seeing a backlash to how he presented himself, Mark McGuire, how he presented his message. And he pretty much said that, you know, he only did steroids to take care of his injury, not to help with his home run race.
Sure.
Well, that's like saying I'm a little pregnant. You know, I didn't inhale. So, you know, the sports analyst is saying, okay, look, you're a sports icon. You have an unbelievable record that you put on there, a world record. Come clean. That's what we want. We want somebody that has, if you've done an injustice, come clean already, admit to it, and let's move on.
Maurice Domino is here, and we're talking about public speaking. And Maurice's book is The Art of Public Speaking, How to Kill from the Stage. You know, I go back to the late Johnny Carson, who I found to be an excellent conversationalist, a good interviewer. But when he was interviewed himself, he said he was terrified to be in a small group of people. Yet when he was on stage in front of, you know, many hundreds or thousands, he didn't have that nervousness. And when you ask someone to get up and do an effective presentation, Maurice, how do you get those? How do you get them to get away from the stage fright, or can you ever?
You know, that's the number one question I get asked at my boot camps, at my seminars. You know, how do I get over those butterflies in the stomach? And Dana, what we got to realize is that those butterflies, I believe this, it is our body, it is our brain asking us one very important question. And what if we're asking ourselves with those butterflies, with those sweaty palms, the question we're asking ourselves is this: are you prepared? because when we go out and to speak in public, it's the closest thing we're going to be doing. I equate it as all of a sudden appearing naked in public. If that's the closest we're ever going to get to being naked in public when we do public speaking. So the question our body is asking us with the butterflies and the sweating palms is, are you prepared? And the best way to do it is to be prepared, is to have a schematic, is to have a blueprint. I've created the Sicilian Mentor presentation template, which brings the speaker, be it novice or the expert, through a step-by-step process to inspire the audience, to move the audience, but more importantly, to move the audience to the back of the room so that they are purchasing your product, they're investing in your service, signing up for your service, or another market is, you know, donating or time or money to your charity.
If you go out and make a presentation, or you make a public speech, or if you're Mark McGuire and you go public, come clean, so to speak, again, I hate that term, and you think you've done wrong, can a Mark McGuire or a CEO of a company or someone who's doing a presentation to sell something or to sell himself and the message that he has, can they fix that?
Definitely. Again, the public understands that public speaking is the number one fear. And even for the listeners today, to get over that butterflies, to help you with that message, understand that your audience understands that the number one fear out there is public speaking. So you already have an empathetic audience. So let's understand that. Now let's go back to Mark McGuire, a CEO or what have you. By having an empathetic audience, you might as well deliver the message that the audience is expecting. And we have a great example of that with David Letterman just recently.
Yep.
And his infidelities.
Yep.
He came on the air and he said, "I cheat." I mean, I'm paraphrasing here. He said, "I cheated on my wife. I'm being blackmailed, and now I'm working with the New York DA, and pretty much he said that's it." And then we moved on. We're moving on. He totally came clean, told exactly what's going on in a step-by-step basis. I mean, here's a great example of public speaking.
Yep.
Develop your message, go point by point, bring the people through this journey, through a story, and that's it. Let the people then decide if they're going to buy or not.
When do you know to, when you're doing that presentation, whether you're Letterman or if you're doing a presentation to coworkers or to a group of people or to a school, children or whatever, when do you know the right time to instill humor? You don't want to get up and do a comedy routine, but I thought Letterman did so well with that situation where every so often he'd even make fun of himself a little bit, and I still think he got the message across very well.
Oh, great. That's a great point, Dana. When we're doing a presentation, even for people back home listening, that when you do a presentation, you have to understand, again, that we're dealing right now with the most a very savvy audience, probably the most savvy audience ever out there. Back in my mom and dad's time, pretty much people could stand up on a soapbox and tell it like it is, give the facts and figures and move on.
Yeah.
In today's market, that's not the case. The audience, yes, they want the information, but they also want to be entertained. How can we entertain them? We could do it with humor, as you suggested. We could do it with storytelling. In fact, one of the best motivational speakers out there, Les Brown, in fact, he's going to be at my boot camp in February, he talks that people forget that we're dealing with humans out there in the audience, be it one-on-one, in an auditorium, or even online. We have to understand that we're dealing with people out there. So what's the story that's going on in their heads while you're speaking? And the best way to cut through that is with humor, is with storytelling, and is with interactivity, actually activities, getting your audience involved.
My guest is Maurice Domino. His book, The Art of Public Speaking, How to Kill from the Stage, can be ordered by going to www.killfromthestage.com or calling toll-free 1-866-252-7768. Let's talk about the book a little bit, Maurice. When you get into the position of having to make a presentation or having to get up in front of a group of people, what's a good age to start training someone? Because kids do it in class all the time, and some of them are just terrified.
You know, it's funny. I always say, the people that people ask me, when did you start speaking? I said, as soon as I was born, pretty much. As soon as I entered this great world of ours. You know, you're never too young and you're never too old. I believe that public speaking is a craft. It's not a gift. I wasn't gifted with this. This is a craft unlike any other craft. If we were talking about cabinet making right now, mm-hmm. it would be the same process. My first cabinet is going to be not that fantastic, not great. But if I stick with it, if I listen to the experts, if I get some coaching, if I get a book, if I get a program, if I keep practicing this, guess what? Eventually, my 100th cabinet is going to be fantastic. Same thing with public speaking. I'm a big believer that it is a craft, and that no matter what skill level you're at, be it a novice or an expert, or no matter what age you're at, you can develop the number one skill set that we need to have in today's world, and that's speaking, that's communication, that's public speaking.
You know, they say, and I've said it myself many times, that a guest on a program is only as good as the questions that they're asked sometime. And we've talked a little bit about Barack Obama versus George W. Bush. Let's talk about Sarah Palin a little bit. Sarah Palin, again, everyone knows who she is, took a beating in public sometimes. When she was interviewed, she stumbled and bumbled her way through speaking, yet when she got in front of a stage and a group of people and spoke from the heart without prepared questions, I thought she did very well. What is the difference in the two?
The difference in the two is a very key factor. When we have our message, and you're giving a great example with Sarah Palin. She had her message. She had it crafted. She knew her bullet points. So when she's doing her public speaking, yes, fantastic public speaker, letting the audience come in, letting we get to know her, and she's endearing us to her. When we're faced with an interview type of thing, what we really got to do is change gears and understand, guess what, it's not about speaking now, it's about listening. And this is just in a conversation or in an interview type of situation. So when people go, when your listeners are going for an interview for a job or what have you, yep. this is where we got to change our mental mindset. It's not what I'm going to say; it's what are they saying? What are they saying? And then based upon my experience, I'm going to base my answer upon their questions. And that's the difference. We got to realize that there's a difference between the interview and as opposed to the presentation.
We've all seen the television programs and read the books and articles, magazines that the tip that was given to the nervous presenter. Just take a look out in the audience and imagine everyone in their underwear. Be yourself. Terms like that. Are there some accuracies to that as far as relaxing before you make a presentation?
You know, I have to dispel that whole imagine your audience naked.
Oh, man.
Because if you can't see them naked, what, are you going to spend the first 5 minutes trying to visualize your audience naked? And then, so please, we have to stop that. And if I could stop anything, it would be that.
Yep.
But in my book, The Art of Public Speaking, I talk about what you need to do even before your first words are spoken on the stage. I call it the moment. And what that is when you take your position behind the lectern or up on the stage, it's, you know, there's certain things, and I take you step by step through it, like taking deep breaths, looking out into the audience and find your cheerleaders. I mean, we could have a whole show just on cheerleaders. Yep. Those are people that are already engaging you. They're smiling. They're already nodding. They're leaning forward. So these are people who are already empathetic. They want to see you win and to make a connection with those people. Start formulating your first thoughts, what you have right there in front of you in your notes. So, yes, there's a lot of things we can do to prepare ourselves before I speak, going back to what I said before about being, are you prepared, preparing ourselves before we speak, and even just the seconds before we speak to prepare ourselves even more. And what I like to say is to have a conversation with your audience.
Absolutely. It's a conversation rather than a speech, I believe. And if you can make it a conversation, I try to do it on my program every night where we're just sitting down and talking. I'm not lecturing to you, and I want to give you the last word. Maurice, we have about a minute left. The difference between a lecture and a presentation, I think, is very important.
Well, definitely. A lecture is anything that is a static moment in time, and we're quite familiar with that with school. While a presentation is a little different, there's an end to the means. In other words, with a presentation, be it a product presentation, a service presentation, what have you, we want to inspire our audience. And I know my years of experience of over 20 years of doing sales and speaking, not only do we want to move the audience, emotionally, but yes, we want them to move to the back of the room to purchase our product, to sign up for our service, or to donate to our charity.
And that's so important. The book is The Art of Public Speaking, How to Kill from the Stage. It can be ordered at www.killfromthestage.com or by calling toll-free 1-866-252-7768. Maurice Domino, thank you, sir.
Dana, it's a sheer pleasure. Thank you so much.
Time went by too fast. I'll have to have you on again sometime.
Would love it. Have
okay.
a good night.
Okay, bye-bye. And I wanted to do that interview to just show you that sometimes it's not as easy as you think to get in front of a bunch of people and speak. However, whether they're in front of you or they're listening like you are right now, whether you're listening live or on the podcast, but then again, you shouldn't be afraid to do it because we all have that built-in technique and that built-in talent. Anyone can do it. Just be yourself. I think that's so important. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We're doing something a little different. I used to do it years ago. We've fired up what we call the Scared Monkeys Radio Cam, webcam. And you can check out yours truly. Don't get too scared by going to www.com. Yeah, just two W's. www.com/Dana Pretzer, DanaPretzer, the number one. So www.com/DanaPretzer1, and you can check out the Scared Monkeys Radio Cam. We'll be back here in just a minute with the President of Morality and Media, Bob Peterson. We're going to talk about online porn and how it affects children's sexual behavior. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and I'm sorry about that delay, but my next guest, I actually had the wrong telephone number for him. Not his fault and not mine. However, it's always a pleasure to have Bob Peters, the President of Morality in Media, here. We're going to talk about online porn and how it affects children's sexual behavior. Morality in Media has published evidence that hardcore pornography that is currently available on the Internet and viewed by children adversely affects behavior and attitudes towards sex. If this evidence is indisputable and quantifiable, shouldn't there be laws in place that restrict it? That's a simple thing that my next guest and I would agree on, but it seems like the powers to be don't. Robert Peters, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
And sorry for the delay, but we had a mix-up in telephone numbers, but I guess that happens with live radio. Let's talk about this. You know, how important with the age of media, the way that it is today, the Internet and everything that's available out there. God dang it, the regulations just aren't there. I know it was prosecuted a little bit under the Bush administration, but certainly is being ignored now.
Well, that you're talking about the adult obscenity laws, and in my opinion, and vigorously enforcing the adult obscenity laws would help protect children.
Yep.
It would put some of these pornographers out of business, and it would send the message that this stuff is bad. A lot of kids these days don't understand that pornography is bad. But I also think in addition to enforcing the adult obscenity laws, we need laws that require the pornographers to implement some form of age verification. It won't be perfect, but it certainly will keep most kids away from the online pornography if in order to access it, you had to in some way verify your age.
Yeah, it's a weak attempt right now. Click here if you're 21 or older, and if you're not, click here. And that's a big joke because kids just can get on and they can see what they want, and it's just certainly not regulated. I want to share a couple of websites. Of course, they're in the show notes, www.moralityandmedia.org and www.obscenitycrimes.org for more information for this. And you're so right, Bob. All you have to do is turn on the news, look at any stories, and there always seems to be that outlining pornography aspect to it, adult porn being accessed by kids. They're impressionable. They're going to act out what they see, or am I wrong?
I'll tell you, you know, just last week, it's a commercial entity that they provide monitoring services instead of blocking the pornography. If a parent signs up with this company, the company keeps track of how the computers under their control are used, so that if the kid goes to some place the kid shouldn't be going to, the parent finds out about it. And as part of this service, they track which words children use, you know, in the searches, what they're looking for. And not surprisingly, the fourth most commonly used word for searches for kids is porn. But I thought, you know, they broke the they broke things down by ages, and one age was group was 13 to 18, 13 to 17. And interestingly, for that age group, porn was the sixth most common word used for searches. But what, well, I tell you, it almost knocked me off my chair. For ages 7 and under, the fourth most common used word in searches for these kids was porn. It just shows what's happening on the Internet. And the, you know, it's interesting. I've, you know, thankfully, you know, one advantage to the Internet is you find out stuff all over the world where, you know, it used to be you'd have to go to a major city library. And consistently, you know, in surveys around the country, 90% of kids are being exposed to pornography by the time they get out of high school. And about a fifth of these kids are hooked on it. I mean, that's what, whether it's the United States or Canada, other countries, that pretty much is the statistics that are survey statistics that are coming forth. These kids are being exposed to pornography like no generation before them.
Robert Peters is here. He's the president of Morality and Media, and I encourage you to check out the websites moralityandmedia.org or www.obscenitycrimes.org for more information. We're talking about how online porn affects children's sexual behavior. I'm a consequences kind of guy. Bob, you know that. You've been on my show many times. If you do the crime, you should do the time. But it seems like with the Internet and all the freedom of speech kooks that are out there, they think that even pornography, even child pornography, is what they consider to be freedom of speech. Am I just out there, or is that a huge problem?
Well, what you, the position you just described, that not only should the adult pornography be protected by our First Amendment, but distribution of child pornography. And I think this would shock most people. That is the official position of the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU. They believe that not only should all, quote-unquote, adult pornography be protected by the First Amendment, but so should distribution of child pornography. Now, you know, part of my answer to that is that that is a perspective that the American people can choose to live under.
Yeah.
You know, we can, by, in a variety of ways, we can, you know, by through our representatives in Congress and in the state legislatures, we can let these people know we don't want any laws against distribution of pornography. And we can also amend the Constitution to make it clear that the First Amendment protects this type of material. But I think from a historical perspective, it's clear to any honest, objective person that the First Amendment was never intended to protect any type of pornography, whether adult or child. So, you know, in my thinking, if the ACLU were an upright organization, if it thinks that all pornography should be protected by the First Amendment, it should seek change in our law through the American people instead of attempting to subvert law through the courts.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Bob Peters is here. He's the president of Morality and Media. Just have a couple of minutes left, Bob. You know, people will say, skeptics will say, well, adults should be able to choose because they're adults. But with the Internet and the lack of regulation or the absolute no regulation and parents who don't supervise their children when it comes to the Internet, in a lot of cases, the Internet is the babysitter for the child, and I'm talking about ages from whatever to whatever, including teenagers, there has to be more responsibility not only on the government, but those adults who may be able to make that choice. But for the young people, they should be protected further from it.
Well, I would certainly agree that parents certainly should be the first line of defense when it comes to protecting children. And, you know, even though our, at Morality and Media, our primary focus is to get laws enforced against pornography, but I certainly fully support parental use of filters and monitoring technology. And, you know, it's amazing, but surveys that have been taken over the last several years pretty consistently show that less than half of parents use filters and monitoring technology. I mean, that's just after, gosh, the Internet was launched sometime in the mid-90s. We are now into year 2010, and yet less than half of parents use filtering technology or monitoring technology. But I make the point that even if many, many more parents did use the technology that's available to them. Once their kids leave the house,
yep.
If one way or another, kids today are going to find ways to access the Internet from computers that their parents cannot control. And so therefore, I asked the question to our, you know, all-wise Supreme Court, how did five of you conclude that parental use of technology is the whole answer to this problem? I don't know what world these gentlemen, and I guess now we have two ladies on the court, live in, because it's not the world that the rest of us live in.
Absolutely. There's a, you know, there's common sense, and then there's political correctness, and it seems like political correctness has run amok, Bob, and it's such a big problem. Last question before I let you go, and I apologize for the connection problems with me trying to get a hold of you. The difference between the Obama administration and the Bush administration when it comes to this issue?
Well, at one level, it's premature. The Bush administration was in significant measure a disappointment when it came to enforcing the adult obscenity laws. But in the Bush, to the credit of George W. Bush and company, at least they enforced the laws, unlike Bill Clinton and company. And they proved that obscenity laws can be enforced today. Doing some back-checking on legal articles published by a website that's run by the pornography industry, but they do some very credible journalism on what's going on in the porn industry. And I wasn't aware. Our side won another case. Somebody else went to jail for a year, another hardcore adult pornographer. And this particular investigation was launched under the Bush administration. So, people who fight pornography are, I guess you'd say that we're still upset with George Bush for not doing more. But at least he did something. At this point, we don't know for sure what the Obama administration is going to do. I tell you, we're getting mixed signals, and I have to hope that the Obama administration is going to do the right thing when it comes to fighting pornography. Whether I support the man generally or don't, I have to hope and work to the end that the Obama administration is going to do the right thing when it comes to fighting pornography. And I really hope it does.
I hope so, too. Bob Peters, president of Morality Media. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me. Sorry about the mix-up.
No problem. Bye-bye. And all we can do really is just hope that the government will come across, because if we can't protect the kids, I don't know who we can protect. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Again, check out our Scared Monkeys Radio webcam at www.com. That's right, just two W's, www.com/Dana Pretzer, the number one, Dana Pretzer one. We'll be back in a minute with former DA, author, victims advocate, all-around nice gal, Robin Sachs. Check out her webpage at robinsachs.com. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. My next guest on Thursday, January 28th, will be doing a book signing. Her, Robin Sachs, and Mark Garagos. Robin will be signing her books, Predators and Child Molesters. It happens every day in Pacific Palisades, California. Join Robin at Village Books, 1049 Swarthmore Avenue in the Palisades. The signing kicks off at 7:30 p.m. and light snacks will be served. I'm not sure what that means. This event will be televised, and there's a link on the show notes on how to find out more. Of course, her website is robinsachs.com. What are light snacks?
You know, I was kind of floored when you just said light snacks, because you know what? I didn't even know that we were serving light snacks. I'm assuming light snacks are carrots and crudités, celery, all those nasty things that I usually don't like, and I know you definitely don't like.
Yeah, there you go.
But you're not coming for the light snacks. You're coming to meet Mark Garagos, maybe say hi to me, and support all of the victims out there.
Now, another thing that's we're going to promote a couple of things tonight that you're doing, February 2nd. Tuesday, Keeping Kids Safe, Facts for Parents and Empowering Tools for Children, a presentation by Robin Sachs from 9:30 to 11:30, and that will be in Encino. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, who would have known? Who's behind this promotion today? I'm loving this. This is a speech that I give
regularly to different schools, not only in the Los Angeles area, but all over the country, where I come out and talk to different school parents about all the different ways of keeping kids safe, both on and offline. And I like using the paradigm of online because parents seem more receptive to, you know, the big bad world of the internet, and kind of can then reel them in from the big bad world of the internet into the homes, to our own lives, and to the people we know, to protect kids from predators, both virtually and in real life.
Well, you can go to robinsachs.com/events, or just click the events tab to learn about that presentation and many more, and find out more about Robin and the radio show Justice Interrupted, you name it. But I want to talk a little bit about this, Robin, and I'm dealing with it tomorrow on my commentary, the Hearsay Law, Illinois, and Drew Peterson. There's a hearing going on right now. I think it's going to be a big part of this case. Your thoughts?
It is going to be a big part. I mean, it was really fascinating. I love it when you hear CNN commentators, Fox commentators calling this the Kathleen Scavo testifying from the grave, vis-a-vis through other people. And, you know, thank goodness that there are hearsay exceptions that allow for circumstances where statements are made under indicia of reliability or circumstances of reliability that are then allowed in court. Everybody, you know, we have kind of the common understanding of what hearsay is, and then there's the legal understanding of what hearsay is. And what people don't recognize is anything that's said outside of court is hearsay. Mm-hmm. So if I were to testify to my own statement that I said yesterday and I'm not testifying under oath in a courtroom, that's technically hearsay. So first of all, I think it's important, and a case like this gives us the opportunity to look at what hearsay really is and look at the exceptions for why certain times statements are allowed in. And when there are circumstances of reliability, things kept in police reports, things memorialized, things dying declarations, public records, things of those sorts, there's hundreds of exceptions, and thank goodness that we have those hearsay exceptions that could allow for this testimony to come in so that we can the systematic abuse and violence and murdering that Peterson's accused of and hopefully will be convicted of.
You know, our favorite defense lawyer, Joel Brodsky, I have to clear my throat there. Actually, I kind of like Joel, but a lot of people don't. He is going to argue, and actually I saw an interview with him today saying this is nuts. It's unreliable hearsay. This should be thrown out. The DA is making a big mistake because this is just a pretrial hearing and I'm learning their whole case, so this is good for me. Your thoughts on the defense attorney, whether it's Joel Brodsky or Jack Smith, and how they would handle this case?
Well, I think that, listen, if you're a good defense attorney, I mean, you're going to obviously argue against the admissibility of any sort of evidence under any theory that you possibly can have. Luckily for Mr. Brodsky in this case, he has a theory that's more than just relevant. He has a hearsay theory, hearsay argument, and hearsay is something that's, you know, the reason why it's protected and that it's not, you know, not absent a good exception not allowed in is that we don't want jurors to listen to evidence that is not reliable. Mm-hmm. But the court has decided that there's been indicia of reliability, meaning that there wasn't any motivation to lie, there weren't circumstances of such that anybody who had any sort of litigation impending at the time and a number of other reasons. And for those reasons, in this case, it is going to be admissible. So I don't think he's making a bad argument, and I think that I would make that very argument. And I think that as a DA, I mean, look at, you know, we talk about it all the time in terms of the Crawford decision.
Yeah.
I mean, those are, you know, realistic concerns that we have under our Constitution.
Yeah, that the defense can't cross-examine the person who's making the allegation. But in this case, sadly, Kathleen Scavo is not available because she has passed on to testify. I think, you know, and I don't know the whole case, obviously. Illinois is different from Florida, where we know very little about the Peterson case. But I think this will be huge when it comes to this. And we won't see, this is my prediction, Drew Peterson in trial for quite some time, because there's got to be an appellate process for even this hearing, or am I wrong?
No, I mean, I don't think, you know, we haven't seen this case move expeditiously anyway, so why it would start moving expeditiously now,
yeah.
I don't know that we're gonna see that. I mean, I think from the defense point of view, as we've said and talked about before, you know, time only makes people less interested, memories fade, and so forth. And certainly we have, you know, not yet determined where Stacey Peterson's body is at this point, and I'm saying a body because I don't think anyone thinks that she's still alive. And I think that, you know, we may end up, you know, with a conviction on the Scavio case before we even get to locating where Stacey Peterson is. But at the same time, you know, this is maybe an opportunity to allow the investigation to continue, and with seeing the state of the evidence, maybe Drew Peterson, as narcissistic as he may be, will see the evidence mounting against him and allow us to find out what happened to Stacey Peterson by pleading guilty to that case following a conviction in Scavio. I mean, there's so many different ways that this possibly can play out. This is just playing a little bit of tea leaf reading for me.
Oh, for sure. And the families definitely, and I hate the term, need closure, but this case has gone on for a while. I think it's going to go on a lot longer. I'm not sure Drew Peterson would admit that he's Drew Peterson at this point right now, but you never know. True. Anything's possible.
True. And also, I mean, I could also see him, like, somehow at some point, you know, being very proud and saying, ha, 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 the yoke's on you, and coming up with some crazy explanation or crazy excuse or crazy something else at the, you know, as to what happened. Who knows?
Well, yeah.
I mean, every time I think that he's beyond, you know, out of control and wouldn't do something, he calls into the radio station from jail, so I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I imagine he misses the media. Robin Sachs is here. You know, Robin is a former felony DA, author, victims advocate, and she'll be having a book signing January 28th at Pacific Palisades. Click on the link on the show notes to learn more about that. Robin, let's talk a little bit just before we finish up. We've got about 5 minutes, but your radio program, Returning Justice Interrupted.
I have to tell you, Justice Interrupted, we are back. Stacey and I have come back in full force, and we are having a great time, albeit on Blog Talk Radio and trying desperately to get our butts off of Blog Talk Radio and on to some sort of nice streaming radio sound quality like you have. We aspire to be like you. But right now, the format has really gotten underway, and we really have our vivacious personalities. We're our contradicting opinions, yet both of us being on the side of justice. We're on a new time, Sundays, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. We have two guests generally a night, where we do kind of one guest in the know on the common everyday media type crimes, the crimes that everybody knows about, and then we try to feature one case that the media does not generally talk about or know about, and always trying to seek justice in those cases where justice has yet been seen or has been interrupted.
So
anybody who has a case or an idea, we'd love to hear from you, and you can reach me at robin@justiceinterrupted.com.
And it's not just justice cases, and again, Blog Talk Radio, that's a whole... Well, it's just not a very good service, I believe, and I don't mean to slight you or your program, but I had a connection problem last show, but the show before I didn't, and I got to admit that your interview with Jim Murray was an excellent one, and it brought forward an honesty and a human side of someone who we see on TV all the time.
Well, and I had the wonderful privilege of being at his friends and family book signing last night here in Los Angeles, which was a total treat. He really is an amazing guy. That interview and his book is, I mean, talking about opening your book and your life being an open book, he really did do that, and he's as genuine and as good as a guy as anybody could ever imagine. And it is nice to see the human side of people, the human side of cases. I mean, there are people behind these police reports and heartbeat behind sadness and so forth, and it's nice to see those, and it's nice to see that the people who are sitting here reporting on this stuff have heartbeats and passion.
Yeah, we're all human, that's for sure. Robin Sachs, her website is www.robinsachs.com. Thank you, and we'll see you again next week.
Looking forward to it. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. And make sure and go to her book signing, go to her website, buy her book. She's a busy gal when it comes to the media. I just wish that they would find a an easier site to listen to their radio program. That's it. Again, I apologize for the connection problems with Bob Peters tonight. You can listen to the podcast of this program a little bit later on by going to www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can pick up podcasts of past shows, listen to the show live, listen to my daily commentary, make comments. You can do almost anything there. My name's Dana Pretzer. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.